And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to what we are calling Detroit Day on the Low Post podcast. We'll have Jeremy Grant, all-star hopeful Jeremy Grant, coming up later. But I want to start with, this is a big honor for me, one of my favorite players of all time, a guy who made me want to go to the University of Michigan. I did not end up going to the University of Michigan, but made it the coolest school on the planet. And a guy that I once wrote a column about called Put Chris Webber in the Hall of Fame. The one and only Chris Webber. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Zach. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
When are we going to put you in the Hall of Fame? I don't know. What do I have to write another column?
Well, first, thank you for the column. My brother, who I won't say he's my agent, but he's like my bodyguard, my younger brother, Jeffrey, he told me about your article and things like that. Because for so long, I had to like try to keep my mind away from those conversations, you know, not because of anything else, but just because you don't want to go through the stress of, you know, thinking about and weighing it when you don't have control. And so for me, not getting in, honestly, you know, it definitely was tough. And good thing I had guys like Charles Barkley and Shaq and others that I played against that are in the Hall of Fame, you know, help validate that. And then you get to a point where you say, you know what, I am a Hall of Famer, without trying to be cocky, just saying, you know, I know what I did. And so what I did was everybody wants to make the Hall of Fame, but I wanted to more so make it that I had a chance to give a speech and shout out all the people that helped me, my AAU coach, my mother, my father. You know, you want those people to be around at that moment. And so I just called last year and just really thanked everybody. And, you know, we kind of had our own thank you ceremony. And that's,
I like,
you know,
it.
But, you know, you definitely think about those things.
All right. Well, let's talk about Detroit for a minute, because you and I are almost the same age. You're a couple years older than me, but we grew up on opposite sides of the basketball spectrum. Okay. I was a Celtics fan in Connecticut. You were a Pistons fan outside Detroit. I have to say, even as a Celtics fan, okay, I hated Lambeer. The rest of the team I actually had a grudging respect for. I liked the Bad Boys even at the time. I thought they were cool. They were different than the Celtics in every possible way, and I thought they were cool. 30 plus years later, I think it's really awesome that a Midwest, and important for the NBA, that a Midwestern market has an iconic team attached to it. And I just think it's important that those markets kind of come back to relevancy. So the Pistons are obviously in a deep rebuild. I'll start with this. Are you following them? And what would it mean for you for the Pistons to sort of get back in the discourse in a relevant way? Because they're sort of this forgotten franchise, but they're also an iconic NBA franchise.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, I mean, those Bad Boys are my 85 Bears, you know. There's something that gives you pride in the city. Lambeer, you know, Isaiah Thomas, my favorite player of all time, but Lambeer may have had the most influence in my career, maybe even in the Fab Five's career. And what I mean by that is that we grew up in Detroit, Jed and myself, and when the Bad Boys really embraced it, you know, Isaiah was nice. He had to smile. He'd beat you up, but he was nice. He had to smile. Dumars was quiet. The real Bad Boy wasn't Robin, it was Lambeer. And when he would go in front of the Celtics and they would get booed, I loved it because his intro, because he would tell them, boo me louder, boo me louder. And so they had a big influence on my career. Number 40, he made six threes in overtime. Okay, let me get off Bill Lambeer. He led the league in rebounding, beat up Barkley, you know. But let me get back to it. I think the Pistons, I do follow them. I want them to make a commitment to the community first. When I was younger, we begged, like, I remember getting in trouble for at night, like, having these conversations, like, what if the Pistons were in Detroit? Like, this is stupid things little kids did. No Instagram, anything. I mean, you're up 2 a.m. My mom's like, the Pistons aren't coming to Detroit. So now that the Pistons are in Detroit, they need to embrace the fans that's been embracing them. The city doesn't, it's not that feel for the Pistons.
And just to be clear for people who have never been there, you mean Detroit as opposed to Auburn Hills, which is, like, people don't realize how far and in the middle of nowhere the Palace was.
Yeah, thanks, Zach, because you got to realize 45 minutes from the city, and all the players that used to play in Detroit used to call me and go, where do I go? I'd say, you got to go to the city. So it was always a disconnect, always. And now that the city finally has it, and people in the city can afford to go, we're a four sports town. The rest of the teams are downtown, and they sell out baseball, football, hockey. So one, they need to make a recommitment to the community that supports them. It's a disconnect. And until that disconnect is fixed, nothing can be right. And then secondly, I really hope they make a change, but they've have some commitments. You know, I'm really hoping for Blake Griffin, a big man like myself, but he's hurt, doesn't even have a dunk this year. We love the fact Jeremy Grant is probably our biggest bright light. He plays hard every night. He has the heart of a Piston. So I think it's going to be great. But if we're honest with ourselves, it's going to take 2 or 3 years to get out of the dungeon. And that's fun. If you're a fan, you can watch us grow. But, you know, it's going to take a little work.
Let's go back through some Bad Boys history, because why not? Where were you? Where were you? Game 6 of the 1988 Finals. This is the
Celtics,
most...
I got a whooping that night.
Game 6 of the Finals. The Finals. Pistons-Lakers, 88.
88. Wait, Pistons lose. 88, 89, 90, 91.
Pistons lose the Finals in 88, 7 games. The most under...
Yeah, Isaiah, that's when...
Yes, we'll talk about it. The most under-discussed controversial call in NBA history. Pistons are up 1 and up 3-2, about to win the championship. Lakers dump the ball to Kareem with 20 seconds left. Skyhook over Laimbeer, misses, foul. You watch that replay. It's a little blurry. I still don't know if there was any kind of contact there. And literally, I don't know why we don't talk about this play more. Maybe it's just so old. It swung potentially the NBA championship. So what do you, were you watching the game? What do you remember about this? Have you ever talked about this with Bill Laimbeer?
I've never talked about it with Bill Laimbeer, but if you look here, he's in a vertical position and he looks around like, you got to be kidding me. And you got to remember the year before, our heart was broken with the steal by Larry Bird and then making a layup in the Boston Garden. And so
with 1 second left, people forget that game was over. That basket went in with 1 second left.
Yeah, think about, Zach, if this was the new NBA where you give up on a team after 2 years. You know, the Pistons lost to the Celtics, lost to the Lakers, and then come back and win too. I think that's pretty cool. But, you know, as a Pistons fan and a homer, not as an analyst now, but as a Pistons fan, yeah, I remember that play. I was at home, and I remember calling foul. You know, that's when I love L.A., you know, all of me. We love it. And Jack Nicholson on the ground and, you know, on the court and all the beautiful highlights and everything and beat L.A. That was those days. And so, yeah, I was at home watching those games, man, and getting in trouble for screaming too loud, knocking over furniture and stuff like that.
Well, that was also the game. That was the series where Isaiah puts up the legendary sprained ankle game. And in game seven, he only had 10 points. He could only go 28 minutes. I mean, people talk about that game too, but Isaiah, you talked about, is your all-time favorite player. Have you talked to him about that game? I mean, I assume you watched that game too. It's an all-time. If people haven't seen Isaiah doing that on one leg, go on YouTube right now, 1988 Finals, Isaiah one leg game. Just search it.
With some heavy weapons on too. Those shoes were heavy. I mean, Isaiah is a weird situation because he's been a mentor since I've been in high school. I've been a fan since I first heard of him, and he's a friend, and sometimes you just don't know how to handle that. So, yeah, I sit and talk to him about all those plays all the time. All the time. I know
you're still mad about that game. I mean, I remember that game was on NBA Classics years and years ago, and I texted Joe Dumars, and I was like, hey, just FYI, I'm watching a young Joe Dumars, and I didn't say what part of the game was going on. He texted back, and he was like, I think the text just said, it wasn't a foul. Like, that was it, and that was the first
Yeah.
So what did it mean when they broke through the next year and swept the Lakers and won the championship? And they and as you said, this team that had been close and close and close, they break through and they dominate. What did it mean to you as a kid?
Yeah, I think people out there have to understand. Well, they know. Everybody's a fan. I mean, what it meant was it validated our city. At that time, it was between us and Chicago going back and forth as murder capital and things like that. It validated the hard work of people like my father. No, they worked in factories all the time. They were the Bad Boys. They weren't the L.A. boys. They weren't the cute boys. They weren't the millionaire boys. They were the Bad Boys. And so it validated that as far as high school sports. It gave us something to follow. Big men started shooting threes because Laimbeer made 6 in overtime. We knew it was game. We knew in Detroit you had to be tough. We knew you couldn't cry on the court. So there was no more fouls called on the park. In the park, Joe Dumars, after winning that championship, what I remember about that most is that his father passed away. And this is just as a fan watching the Channel 7 or 4 after the game. And he put his ring in his father's casket when he passed away. It meant the world to us. Pistons meant everything to us, and they still do, because, you know, sports represent so much more. And they were the underdogs. We felt that, you know, the league, as a fan, you feel the league wants LA to win. You feel the big markets. And so winning that meant, you know, one for the good guys, one for the underdogs. And me personally, as a Detroiter, you know, we got to 84 when the Tigers won the championship, Kirk Gibson and those boys, and then 89 and 90. I just remember going all the way from not being old enough to drive, getting to beep the horn when my father drove around the streets, people hanging out the window, till me being able to drive him the last championship and beeping out the window. So they meant the world to us, Bad Boys forever.
What did it mean to you to play for them late in your career? And not just play, you started for them, and you started every game in the playoffs for them in 2007. What do you remember about the moment you knew, I'm being traded to the Pistons, I'm going to be a Piston, as my career is maybe winding down, I'm getting a chance?
Yeah, so that was a long journey, because when I was a free agent and going back to Sacramento, Joe D really recruited me. My brother coached his son in high school. I've known Joe D forever. He's a man I admire. And Joe D sat me in his office. He had Martin Lawrence do a tape in his character for me, saying, come home to Detroit. I mean, this was by far the best recruiting ever.
Wait, Detroit. What character was he in? Like a
little bit of Romy Rome, but he was telling me from his backyard, you know, hey, you got to be a Piston. He had the basketball and everything. It was just awesome to, you know, coming home and just looking. I just had such a commitment to Sacramento. But I remember Joe D looking me in my eyes and going, our plan is this year to really be good, maybe sneak a championship, but we're going to win one in the next 3 years. And I want you to be a part of it. And at this time, there was no way to see that. And coming home at that time would have been something else. And I had established something in Sacramento. So not making it there was tough. And when they won, I even called Joe D, you know, damn near crying, like, you did it, congratulations, I wish I was a part of it. And then going home, I mean, it was the best locker room I've ever been in the NBA.
Wow.
Period. Maybe because we were the oldest locker room in the NBA. Everyone was old. And at that time, Larry Brown, they won a championship before, 2 years before, and Larry Brown really put his stamp on the team. So I never saw a team that concentrated this much on defense. Rasheed Wallace, who was my rookie coming in, was now my peer. And his growth, how he was on the team, Chauncey Billups, Rip, Tayshaun Prince might be the smartest player I've ever played with. That was just the joy to be in that locker room. And so I remember that, the joy to be in that locker room, having Coach Collins, man, MVP, coach me, hear old stories. And then I remember, you know, LeBron had a hell of a game. You know, I thought we were going to go to the championship that year. He hit us with 25 in the fourth quarter.
I was gonna ask you about your memories of that game. 25 consecutive Cleveland Cavaliers points to put the Cavs up 3-2 in that series.
Yeah, whoever doesn't believe LeBron is good, you know, you should just watch a couple games. But, you know, I remember that. I remember playing against the great LeBron. I remember, you know, sitting in the Cleveland locker room knowing it was over. And I really retired a Piston. I tried to go to Golden State to have some type of semblance of full circle. But, you know, I definitely left my heart and soul in that locker room in Cleveland. And it was one of the best times. It was one of the best times of my life.
Is that the best? Was that the best individual performance you ever played against, that game? Like, I just remember watching that game. I was watching it with my dad, and he was just going to the basket over and over again. There was nothing fancy about it. It's just like, and I remember, like, they just can't do anything. He's just steamrolling to the basket over and over again.
That's definitely one of the best individual games, and I'll put it because that team is one of the best defensive teams, period. That Pistons team, or one of the top teams that didn't go to the championship defensively. So, yeah, they that was just awesome to see what he was doing as a young guy. And, man, he only got better. So it was, yeah, that was something.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All right, it's time to get painful. Have you ever watched Game 6 of the 2002 Conference Finals between you guys and the Lakers, which is known as, let's just call it the free throw game?
Yeah, I watched it a year and a half ago for the first time because I had to write about it. And so,
oh, wait, what did you write about it? Maybe I forgot about this.
No. It's later project. I'm, writing an autobiography, and I talk about that whole series. A lot, can't be bitter about it, but what happened. And so I couldn't watch that game until I had to a couple years ago. So what, 15 years? I don't even know what year it was, whenever it was, that damn game.
And saving it for the book?
No. I mean, after that game in an interview in the locker room, I said, that was the first time I've ever been cheated. That game, a lot of that game is why I commentate now. Like when I commentate, I don't care if the ref likes it or not. And I'm friends with referees and I play golf with them, hang out. They're great guys. The lack of balls that the media had I don't know what to say, except I knew it then. Players made comments to me on the other team then. And I'm in sports, so what can you do? You can't cry about it and say, what if? So say what it is and keep moving. But just watch the series, son. Look how we beat them by 23 or 25 the game before. We had them figured out.
You're saying
win a championship. We're not champions. Should have won the next game. Should have made free throws, all that good stuff. But that game six, yeah, it was.
You're saying Lakers players made comments to you?
Everybody. Players on other teams.
Oh, were calling me.
No. I'm saying everybody. Everybody. Let me be clear. Everybody. Everybody. And then players from other teams call after to echo what everybody said on that court.
So it's clear. I can see your face. It's clear this series is still painful for you. So let me ask a happy question first, and then we'll go back to sad stuff. I remember interviewing Vlade Divac maybe 2 years ago. The Kings were having a nice run at the end of the 18-19 season. It seemed like it was coming together, and it seems like it's coming together a little bit now with Fox and Halliburton lighting things up. And I remember interviewing Vlade about what it would mean for him to be the GM of a Kings team that reached far again. And Doug Christie was walking by us as we did the interview on the baseline in Philadelphia. And he looked at Doug Christie and he said, you better believe he and I talk about it. And Bobby Jackson was on the staff then, I think. He said, he pointed to Bobby, I think. He said, you better believe Bobby Jackson and I talk about it. It means something to us as a group. For us, now Vlade is obviously not there anymore, for us to build this particular franchise back. So do you feel, you obviously don't work for the Kings. I don't believe you've ever worked for the Kings, but that group seems to still share some connection. And obviously, to neutral NBA fans, everybody loved that team. Everybody loved to watch that team. Even Lakers fans begrudgingly loved to watch that team. But are you guys all still in contact? Do you feel that same sort of bond towards the fans in the city?
Yeah, man. I love Sacramento. I go there all the time. I have business friends there. I wanted to run the team. I don't think anyone really knows the pain that we had. We did lose to the best. We lost to 3 Hall of Famers. One happened to be on the sideline coaching. But I made a decision to stay there. Not many people know that it was a trade in the works for me to go to L.A. Also, I almost went to San Antonio as a free agent. Let's just take Damian Lillard. At the end of his career, he's going to be called a loser because he's not going to win one important. He's great. One of my favorite players. He's awesome, right? But when he's a free agent, he's going to have a chance to come up, and he's going to stay there because he's confident, arrogant. He's worked his butt off, and he loves Portland. But if Portland doesn't win one, he's going to have his fire burning, you know, all the time. And so
let me say as someone in the media that if that scenario comes to pass, I hope you're wrong and we don't say, well, where's the ring and this and that, because that discourse is usually silly to begin with. But Dame,
Zach, who haven't we done it for? I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Harden is the same kind, but Harden has had a better career, gave his heart to Houston. It didn't end ceremoniously, all that, but the GM and the coach left. Like, that was an error. Or let's say, I just don't know who we haven't done that to, Zach. I just don't know.
And it just takes time. Like, we did it to Barkley, we did it to Ewing, we did it to Stockton. Well, that's right. Shaq still does it to Barkley more than anyone else. But so, yeah, you were saying something about you almost got traded to, I guess, the Lakers.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I go off on tangents. I had to make you work, earn it. But, you know, so, yeah, does it mean a lot? Yeah, I love Sacramento. I love the fans. It would mean a lot to see them. And more for the fans. Like, those are the same fans that were there cheering us. I did not want to go to Sacramento. I made it clear. I'm a bottom dweller. Terrible. Nobody cared. They didn't put money into the team. They were gimmicks. They were the laughing stock of the league. Our teams, and when I played in Golden State, we could drive. This is the only team I've ever been where they let you drive to the game and drive back because it was like, just whatever, you know? And then you get there and you meet the people. And then you see the fans. And you're like, oh, no. Y'all got this all wrong. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of his ego. I wanted to be that ambassador. Everybody wanted to be that ambassador. We had an international team. We were playing the right way, you know? So it was, I will say, one of the best moments of my life going through that with them and having so much fun. But yeah, I love Doug Christie to this day. I love those guys. So yeah, we talk a lot and, it's good. I always say, you definitely want to win a championship, but having, won high school championship, been to championships in college and things, I think that you want to play with guys, since it's no guarantee, you want to play with guys that you can lose with and love each other. Because the winning is easy if you're at that point. And with those guys, whether at Michigan, whether at Sacramento, that's just the way it was.
And by the way, let me just speak as a neutral college basketball fan. None of us care that Michigan didn't win the championship. We were all cheering for the Fab Five. We all, in our hearts, the Fab Five won the championship. But I don't care what the game, what the results of the game were. I don't want to even care. Two more quick Kings questions. I'm always curious about this game. You mentioned you guys had figured the Lakers out. That's what you said. Game 4, you're up in 2-1 in the series. You've won games 2 and 3. You're up 17 late in the second quarter. Samaki Walker hits a half-court shot after the buzzer. We don't realize it's after the buzzer until too late. It's already counted. They, of course, end up winning by 1. We don't have to talk about how they won by 1. It's been rehashed many, many times.
Damn, Ori.
And I'm wondering, when you guys go in that locker room up 65-51, chance to go up 3-1 in LA. What's that? What do you remember from that halftime locker room? Does that Walker shot take some air out of you, or do you guys still feel like, oh my God, like we've been up by 20 this whole game? We feel it.
Yeah. Anytime a last second shot happens, it takes the air out. We never thought the game was closed with any Laker game. I mean, they had Kobe and Shaq, and Phil Jackson. So we knew we were up against the best, maybe some of the best to ever do it. But, you know, they changed the rule after that shot. I don't know if you realize that that's why we have the point, whatever we have, and put on the clock, actually, tenths of a second after that. You know, that was, it was a big shot, but we were rolling. You know, we knew how to space the floor. We were playing a different way. So, no, I mean, and we like playing on the road more. We loved it. Eddie Murphy over there looking at us, Denzel, let us show you what's up tonight. So it was, no, we didn't feel that we had it. We felt like, okay, we came here and finished half the job. Let's finish it all.
Last Kings question. I don't know if anyone's ever asked you this before because I never heard about it before until yesterday. True or false? And this, I'm not even sure this is even funny anymore, but we'll do it anyway. True or false? Vlade Divac once commandeered a police car and pulled you over in a fake traffic stop after a Kings practice.
That's true. Well, I tell you, this is a travesty we didn't win, man. It was so much fun. We held each other accountable. Yeah, Vlade did that, and he was speeding because I was super speeding, and he was speeding. He didn't even tell you, like, he went up. If I really tell you, I guess it's old now, but he did some type of thing where he almost flipped the car over. You got to realize, Vlade's all Europeans drive crazy from my time of playing with Murison, Vlade, all these guys. But yeah, Vlade was that. The best one is we had a rookie. Vlade and I used to buy suits and clothes for the rookies, take care of them, but you got to do some stuff. So one rookie started feeling himself, and we told him, don't gamble on the plane. Do not gamble. We're not going to take care of you if you go gamble. You can't win. He goes and gambles, loses his life. And so we repair his life and make up for everything that he's lost, but he has to cut his hair into a Mr. T mohawk during this game on ABC or whatever the national game we were on, and sit on the bench next to coach. And coach is looking at us like, I know what y'all are doing. Y'all are so stupid for doing this. And the whole game, Vlade has the in-house production keep shining this moment with Mr. T. And it was the best locker room that I've been in. Jay Will, he lost a bet to me. And it's for a lot of money, for $5,000 or whatever. And yeah, he's going to pay me, but he's really pissed off. I think it's because Florida loses a football game, and I just want to bet against him because he's the most obnoxious fan in the world, especially when it comes to, as he said, Florida sports, shawty. Y'all know how to handle Florida sports, shawty.
So this is fantastic.
Tired of him. I won, and he brings it all in nickels, has the ball boy loaded in my car. I get two flat tires because
this is not. This cannot possibly be true.
Handsome man. I get two flat tires because it's $5,000 worth of nickels. I don't even know how much that is. Then get someone to fix the car, go up to the bank, and I was just pissed for about 2.5 hours as we sat there and made sure all the nickels were there. And every single nickel was there. But, yeah, that's how it was. That's how it was on our team, brother. Hito Turkoglu, Peja. You know, we had Jimmy Jackson. We had great coaches, great guys.
You had Heydu when he had the frosted tips, which look very unfortunate in retrospect. I have about 40 questions, particularly about Vlade Divac in a police car, and how that ended, and when you realized you were being pulled over not by a cop but by Vlade. But we're running out of time. I have 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. I promise you 30 minutes. So the last question I have to ask you is, you were a part of the most famous non-televised basketball game in the history of planet Earth. Well, one of the most famous non-televised basketball games in the history of planet Earth. The Dream Team scrimmage against a collection of all-star college players. Chris Mullin has said publicly you played quite well in that game. What do you remember walking into that gym? I don't even know where that was. I think it was in the States somewhere. But what do you remember walking into that gym and being like, I can't believe this is happening? Or are you like, I want to freaking win. I don't care who I'm playing against.
I had water in my eyes. I mean, it was just, I was really crying inside. I mean, I had all these guys in posters on my wall. Barkley and Malone were the best power forwards ever. You know, I remember being in a huddle with Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, you know, our whole squad, because I had known them since I was like 14. I remember going, this is our moment, guys. Like, We all dreamed about being in the NBA. We are here. Like, we are here. I remember Grant trying to D up Jordan. It was like everybody, Hurley against Stockton. Everybody was going against their hero. It was the best basketball moment in my life. We did win. Chuck Daly brought me home and talked to me about how we won, how we need to get better, all this. But the next day, no one talks about this. We did not score 1 point.
Yeah, they were not.
They
happy.
Denied us. Like, it was the most embarrassing thing ever. But we got the first win. Best moment, period, in my basketball life.
All right, C-Web, you've got to go. You've got the TNT game, Mavs Warriors tonight. You have your Zooms with the coaches. This has been an honor. We'll have to do a more proper full career retrospection when the time is right. But thank you for talking a little Detroit hoops and everything else. One of my favorite players of all time. I used to imitate the baseline spin, which you have credited to James Worthy, and dunk on my Nerf hoops. So this is an honor. Thank you very much.
Hey, Zach, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, the truth is all the lift big, get big, and Beachbody ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start with thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey, learn the basics, and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
All right, I'm very excited about this. To continue Detroit Day, let's bring in one of the breakout players of the season, a legitimate all-star candidate for the Detroit Pistons, who made a very daring decision, not the safe decision, not a decision a lot of players would have made, to leave a conference finalist in Denver to come to a rebuild in Detroit. Jeremy Grant, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm hanging in. So, all-star, let's just start right off the bat. You're a candidate for all-star. I think it would be an incredible story. Should there even be an all-star game? Will you go if you get selected?
It's definitely a lot going on. I think in theory, I mean, it's definitely good for you morally. I don't think there should be an actual All-Star game, especially with everything going on. But at the same time, it's an honor to be in contention for that. So
you are averaging 24 points and 6 rebounds a game on 45% shooting, 40% from three. I will admit, I did not see that coming. I was one of the people who was like, whoa, this is going to be a big jump for Jeremy Grant. And I will give you an example. I'm going to give you a stat that you may not even know about yourself. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
You have made 9 pull-up threes so far this season. So 9 threes off the dribble. You're 9 of 27 on threes off the dribble. How many pull-up threes do you think you made in your entire career before this season?
Not many.
6. So here's my question. We saw very little of this kind of player in previous stops, running a ton of pick and rolls, off the dribble threes. If I had seen practices and workouts, would I have seen that player? Like, how confident were you that this player was in you somewhere?
I mean, you have to be confident. Like you said, I made a controversial decision. And I think that was more based off my work ethic. So I know what I can do, and I knew what I could do based on like my workouts and everything. That's where my confidence comes from. So yeah, I mean, if you came to the workouts and things like that, you would see it. But I've never been put in a position to do what I'm doing now, and it was always put my team first. I'm in a situation, and I want to win. I'm a winner. So that was always what came first for me. And, you know, just as my career was going on, you know, you, you know, you have a short window of when you can play and what you can do. So I, you know, I just wanted something different, and yeah, that's why I'm here now.
Are you surprised at how successful you've been individually so quickly, or did you feel it like preseason or whatever? You were like, okay, I can do this. Is there any part of you that's surprised?
Not really surprised. Maybe I thought maybe it might have happened a little bit towards like the middle of the season. So I'm not really surprised. The timing is better than expected, but at the same time, not really surprised on.
Do you feel it at all physically? Like it's a different kind of burden, right? To be the lead ball handler on a team, the leading scorer on a team. I mean, obviously you play hard all the time. You've been a great defensive player your career. You're grinding every minute, but it's a different kind of responsibility. Do you feel it physically or mentally? Like, are you worried there's going to be a wall you're going to hit at some point, or do you feel totally like you would normally feel after 20 games?
It's definitely a lot different. It's a lot more mileage, I think, on your body. You still got to play both ends of the basketball. You have a lot more usage. So it's definitely a lot more wearing, tiring on the body. And mentally, you have to prepare for the game differently, knowing that you're the main focus on the other team's scouting report. You gotta think the game a lot more before the game. You got to prepare differently. It's a completely different game when you're in this position. So you look at guys who are stars now, and you start to realize that it takes a lot. But at the same time, this is what I asked for, so I'm ready for it. So.
Yeah, you also James Edwards at The Athletic, you talked to him for a really good story a few weeks ago about why you went to Detroit. And it's not something that I had known before he wrote that story, because everyone's saying, oh, he went for a bigger role, you know, the offers were the same. And you came out and you said part of the reason that Detroit appealed to you was, as a black man playing for a black coach in Dwayne Casey and a black GM you've known for since you were a kid, I think, in Troy Weaver, and in one of the blackest cities in America with one of the highest black populations, and for a team that just relocated from the suburbs to the city proper a couple of seasons ago. I had never heard that before, and I thought that was very interesting. So that was at the forefront of your thought process. Was it, when did it dawn on you that was at the forefront of your process? Is it something that you had been thinking about even before, or when did it hit you?
It was extremely appealing for me, just like you said, to be a black man and to be able to have that entire experience. It was definitely appealing to me. I wouldn't say that was, I mean, obviously it wasn't the only reason that I came here, but it definitely helped to bring me here.
What appealed to you about that? Just because, like, you know, there's been a lot of, I think, justifiable criticism in the NBA about how the executive and coaching ranks do not look like the player ranks. And that's, Detroit is one of the places where it does. Is it just as simple as that, or was it something larger, some comfort issue?
Well, I mean, that is the case. And also, like you said, the comfortability level, knowing that you have people that have similar experiences to you, whether it's growing up, especially Troy, just me knowing Troy, I know, you know, what he's been through, how he's, you know, grown. And obviously him knowing me makes it a lot easier. But I think, yeah, the comfort level, you know, it's definitely comforting for me personally to look over and know that my GM has experienced a lot of the same things that I've experienced as a black man in America and things like that. And then also, like, as a coach, I got to be, you know, with Dwayne Casey all the time, Coach Casey all the time. So just to know that he understands, you know, where I'm coming from off the court helps me to be more comfortable on the court. So.
Do you still follow the Nuggets, or have you put out of sight, out of mind?
Nah, I still follow them. Still follow them. Got a lot of friends over there. So,
do you? Let's talk about some of the iconic sort of shots and moments of your career, starting with the Nuggets. The Anthony Davis buzzer beater in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. I watched it again today to remind myself, where's Jeremy Grant? Because I knew you were on the floor. Where is Jeremy Grant as you're guarding LeBron, who's setting a screen for Anthony Davis, and you stick on LeBron because the screen doesn't hit. So take me through that play. I'm sure you can still see it in your mind's eye and what the conversation was in the huddle about that play.
Yep. So yeah, it's definitely tough. I can definitely see it. So the conversation was, we're switching 1 through 5 before the ball comes in, obviously a few seconds left. It was contact switching. So if your man sets a screen on somebody on your team, you switch it. So it was a little different. LeBron was standing there. He ended up walking down. He didn't really set a screen. Anthony Davis was on the right elbow. He ran straight from the right elbow to the 3-point line all the way around. There was no screen. I think we kind of got it a little confused. It was two people on LeBron. Anthony Davis was wide open.
Yeah. What's Jokic the locker room? Jokic made it nice for big Jokic. Yep. You got out there pretty good, waving a hand in his face.
Did. Yep, yep.
What's the locker room like? What's the night in the bubble like after that game? You can't go anywhere, right? There's like one restaurant you can go to. So how does a team take a blow like that, go down 2-0 to LeBron? And you know, if you're down 2-0 to a LeBron team, you're now in huge trouble. What do you do after a game like that?
Honestly, I mean, you just look at the things that you could have did better throughout the game. Can't really harp on it too much. You know, you got a game in another day and a half or 2 days, whatever. You just got to focus on the next game, honestly. It definitely hits pretty hard. It's just definitely tough. You got a few hours to harp on that, and then you got to move on to the next game.
The round before that, obviously, you guys complete the crazy comeback against the Clippers. Okay, so you're down 3-1. We all know that. You're down 12 or 13 at halftime. And they even start pulling away a little bit in the third quarter. But inside that halftime locker room, do you really believe as a team, oh, we're fine, we got this? Is there any, like, I don't know what you remember from that halftime Game 5, if Malone said something or if it's just totally calm and normal, you're like, we're just going to whittle it away. We just did this against Utah, but the Clippers are a different beast. Like, what do you remember of that locker room?
We were definitely still confident. We had a lot of firepower on that team. We had a lot of talent. Five, maybe six players that can score 30 points on the team. We wasn't really too worried. We were just like, I mean, it's now or never. We got to do this or we're going home. So I think we kind of had that mindset. Obviously in the series before, in the Utah series as well. We were pretty confident. And once we got Game 5, we were really confident at that point. Yeah.
It seemed so. What are your impressions of the Pistons young guys? Pick Isaiah Stewart, Sadiq Bey. What are your impressions? I like watching Stewart a lot. He just wants to kill people out there and get every, you know.
Yeah.
What are your impressions of him?
No, I love these young guys, man. Especially Isaiah, Sadiq, like you said, even Killian. I know he's out right now, but I mean, Isaiah. I mean, his motor, his attention to detail. He's learning. He's learning a lot right now, and he's gonna be really good. He got a lot of basketball IQ, and like you said, his motor, the way he approaches every game, not even just the games. You guys can see him in practice and even walk through and things like that. You guys understand why he plays like that. So him, Sadiq, Sadiq's minutes are, you know, off and on sometimes, but he got a lot of talent. And going forward, I think we could be really good. It's just a lot of young guys right now. We're kind of learning the game. We're in a lot of the games, but, you know, we got to.
You guys have been in a lot of games, and I've read comments and see, like, it seems like you take pride in that. Like, the record is what it is, but you're not rolling over for people. Like, Tatum has a buzzer beater, basically last second shot to be. You're in a lot of games. It seems like there is a certain. I mean, the Pistons talked in the offseason about people are going to see the character of this team. They may not agree with all the signings we've done. They may not think we have enough shooting, this and that, but we're going to be tough and competitive. And it's one thing to say that and talk and talk and talk, but you guys have done it. Like, it seems like you really do take pride in that.
Definitely. I think Troy's, he put this team together. And then he's definitely, he's definitely not finished. But I think we do. We have great character and guys, and I don't think anybody's willing to give up in the game. So I think that'll go a long way, especially going forward.
What's the scene like in Denver when you guys find out right before tip-off that there's been an inconclusive test and the game that you're literally dressed to play is about to be postponed? Like, and I mean this, like, break it down for me. Literally, what happens? Like, who comes in the locker room and tells you that this is happening? Where does everybody go? How long are you in the arena? Like, I need the whole mechanics of it.
Yes, it was crazy. So, like you said, we was dressed. We had just had a Western film right before we were supposed to go out and for layup lines. What is it? 24 minutes on the clock. So 24 minutes before the game. We bring it in the huddle. So we're getting dressed. Everybody's getting ready. You know, music playing. Coach Casey comes in. He's like,
Who picks the music?
Well, we mix it up. So we let Sekou do some of the music because, you know, he got a lot of energy. His music choice, you know, he plays a lot of NBA YoungBoy. So yeah, we let him pick two songs. He got a couple few good songs.
Has anyone done it and been banned?
Nobody again? Banned.
So Casey comes in and tell me from there.
Yep. So he comes in, he says, he tells us that, we might not be able to go out yet. Just hang tight. Everybody's like, yeah, what's going on? Then, Michael Lindo, GM's assistant, he comes in and he tells us that one of the guys' tests might be inconclusive. So at that point, we're sitting there, we're looking around like, when they say that, that means we're in for a long haul. Because if somebody's inconclusive, that means they really don't want us to go out there. You know, so we're sitting there. So they walk out. We're sitting there for a while, not really knowing what's going on, but like at that point it's like the game's probably off. But you want to stay in the mindset just in case, blah, blah, blah. So then they come in again and they tell us, the game's off. Yeah, we hop in the shower, you know, get ready, get tested again. So we get tested again. We get tested after every game anyway. And then we go sit in the bowl. We're just sitting there. We're the only ones there. Then we have to get tested again after that. So two times after the game, come to find out that nobody had it. So then we go to the plane, sit there for, you know, a little while, go to Utah, and then we got a game that day. So
have you been able to go out to dinner with teammates in any city on the road, or is it been all, I mean, I know different rules, different cities. Have you actually been able to say, okay, this city we're allowed to do it, this restaurant's approved, it's safe, we feel comfortable, let's go out and have a dinner, the three or four of us? Has that happened?
No. No. Wow. Yeah, it hasn't happened. And there's so many rules that are happening right now that you're kind of afraid to do anything. You don't want to get fined. I'm not even sure what the rules are. I just know that I'd rather just stay inside and not do anything than to risk going to dinner with my teammates and getting fined. So,
you went to India by yourself as a young adult, which is like traveling by yourself is a different experience. I've taken a couple of trips. I went to Guatemala by myself once. India by yourself. Why did you do it? And how long were you there? What's a highlight? What's something you'll always remember from that trip? That's adventurous.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I started traveling by myself, might be 3 years ago now. When I first told my mom that I was going to travel by myself, I was going to go to Africa. She was scared. She didn't want me to go by myself, blah, blah. So she ended up coming with me to South Africa and Egypt. And then I ended up going to Ethiopia by myself. She didn't want to go to Ethiopia. So, but that was my first travel experience by myself. I think I kind of do it because I like to kind of experience the culture of things of different places. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I went to India, kind of experience the culture, see how it is. Kind of intriguing to me. And a lot of people don't like to travel like that. So, yeah, so I went by myself. Something that I'll never forget, the Taj Mahal. I seen the Taj Mahal. It was amazing. Just the symmetry of it and everything. Then I went to Himalaya Mountains in Sikkim. That's something I won't forget. I mean, it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things. But those are probably...
You like Indian food?
Amazing. Amazing. All over. Yep. Every spot. The curry, the different spices they use, everything.
So you've had... This has been your career. It's not a career that would be easy to duplicate. You come into the league... And the Sixers are just like in the deepest part of the process from the beginning of it. Then you go to Oklahoma City and you play with Russ during the triple-double year, which must have been incredible. 1 year in Denver and here. So here's my question. I want you to close your eyes and think back to all the players who played on that first Sixers team. And I'm looking at the list right now. There are so many. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who's out of the NBA right now from that team that should be in the NBA? Give me one or two guys that are out of the NBA that are good enough to be in the NBA.
KJ McDaniels, for sure.
I don't even know where he is.
I think he's playing overseas. Yeah, I think he's playing overseas right now. Yeah, I think he should still be in the NBA, especially with the way the NBA is now. Who else?
That was my number. That was going to be, if you had forced me to guess who is his first pick going to be, that was going to be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Alexi Shved?
Yeah, he was really good. I think he's having fun. I think he's back home right now. I think, yeah, he's just living. But, yeah, I definitely think he could definitely still or should still be in the league. If he wanted to, I feel like he could have still been. So.
Did Jokic ever hit you in the face with a pass?
No, really close, though. Really close a couple times, yeah.
Did you ever laugh on the bench at some of the passes he would throw? I mean, I watched Denver games and I'd break out laughing like four times in a game.
Definitely, especially when you first get there, because you don't really expect anybody to pass that way, let alone a big man, a center. Yeah, just the things that he sees that you don't think he sees. It's incredible, especially even playing defense. Against him, so in practice and things like that, or you know, walk through your shoot arounds and things like that, he'll be, you know, joking around, but at the same time, you know, like I'll be like on the weak side trying to guess which one, you know, which player he's gonna pass it to. You know, he'll do like a no look or behind the back or things like that. So, nah, it's incredible.
Speaking of the process, and your jump shot, I once talked with John Townsend, who was a shooting coach with the Sixers back then, mm-hmm. and he was telling me how much work, even then, you're putting in, because you came right into the league and we're like, we're making this guy a 3-and-D player. This is our number one goal with him. And the three took a long time. I don't have my notes, but he told me there was like some contraption he would put on your arm or elbow or something to try to change it. So like what in the world? What, it sounds like a robotic arm or something. What was it?
Yeah, it was something for my wrist. It would help to keep my wrist straight when I turn. So when I turn my hand to shoot it, it would help keep my wrist straight. So when I follow through, it would be straight. He made that. And we work.
Yeah, it's
with
like
it.
It's like his own device, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we worked with it for a while. I still work with JT to this day. So I mean, yeah, he definitely helped me to get here. I've done a lot of work with JT. But yes, yeah, I don't even know how to duplicate it. Honestly, he got some screws in there and things like that. You know, he got a metal part on the side. It'll keep my wrist straight, keep my elbow tucked in, and yep.
When Russ was going to try to break the triple-double record that year for most triple-doubles in a season, did you want to be the guy who scored on the assist? There was drama about it was going to be an assist I think he needed to break the triple. I just remember it happened in Denver, and I don't remember who made the basket, but like, did you want, there was some basket that clinched some record. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember. Did you want to be that guy? Or did you feel pressure? Like, if I miss, if I keep missing, like, I remember Sabonis missed a bunch of shots and I was like, poor Sabonis, he's never going to hear the end of this.
I didn't necessarily want that. I just wanted him to break it. So however we had to do it, we was going to do it. But I mean, he did that, you know, he did that. He got us so many open shots. So it was, it was going to happen. I mean, it was amazing. It was the most amazing season that I've ever seen anybody have, let alone been a part of. Me and Russ, still close to this day. He helps me. He helps me with things now. Me being in a new situation, him already being in situations like this. It was an amazing season. It was amazing.
So you've talked to him about what's it going to be like to be in this role? What do I need to do to prepare myself? All you've talked about being like the number one option kind of thing.
Definitely. Yeah. I talk with Russ about it. All the time. He tells me just being the focus of a scout report is different, you know. And it was a few games, you know, where people started guarding me a different way, and we had to make adjustments, and you know, he was talking me through it, you know. So
speaking of Oklahoma City, I have to ask you about another iconic shot. You're under the rim boxing somebody out when Damian Lillard's walk-off logo shot is up in the air to end that series in Portland. So you're not really involved in the play, but you're under the rim. You can see it. Did you think, oh God, uh-oh, this is going in? Did you, like, what's going through your head as that play is unfolding? Like, were you surprised he hadn't dribbled anywhere? He's just dribbling 40 feet from the rim as the clock is running out. So what's going through your head as that whole thing is unfolding and as you're watching the ball in the air?
So I was, yeah, like you said, he was just dribbling the ball at the top. I was under the rim. I think my guy was in the corner. I know my guy was in the corner. And I was sitting there. He was dribbling the ball. He was dribbling it. And once it got to a certain point, all I thought in my head was he's about to shoot the ball. And I know PG thought the same thing. That's why he jumped before Dame. When he released it, it was straight. It was like, damn, I hope this is an in and out. Like, I hope it bounces out. He makes it. I sit there, kind of stare, kind of take in everything that was going on. It was tough. It was tough. It was a tough one.
What is there even to say in the locker room after that game? Do you guys all pack up quietly, get on the plane, and that's it? What do you do on the plane after a game like that? Just go to sleep?
Yeah, you're not going to be able to sleep for a few days. There's nothing you can really say. We're going home at that point. That's going to be on your mind for a while. Get off social media if you don't want to see it, because, you know, it's going to be everywhere they still put that up sometimes. But,
That's going to play forever. I got news for you. You're going to see that shot 9 million times in your life. Yeah. Last one, and I'll let you go. I am not a comic book guy, so I'm not the right audience for this. I have been told that you are a big comic book guy. Give the comic book nerds which is not me because I don't know anything about comic books. Give the comic book nerds a recommendation from Jeremy Grant for maybe an under the radar comic or a new comic or something that would impress the comic book nerds.
That would impress the comic book nerds.
Or irritate them. Either way, I don't care.
Well, one of my new favorite comic book that I read is The Boys. I think they just came out with a show. The show is not as good as the comic, but The Boys, it's pretty vulgar. I think a lot of comic book nerds would definitely like that. So
what is it about? Sell me. Sell me on it.
All right, so it's a superhero comic book series, and it's kind of like the X-Men thing. You know, people have powers and things like that. They get it from, well, I don't want to yeah, I don't want to tell everybody what's going on in
there. Okay, all right, okay.
But yeah, you know, they got powers. You know, it's they got a seven, which is the strongest superheroes. You know, they're up top, and they do a lot of crazy. They do a lot of crazy stuff. They're not the superheroes that you think. You know, they're more like villains. Like if real people had powers, how would they act? You know, if you were the strongest man in the world, like, would you want to help everybody, or like, would you just do whatever you want to do? You know, so. So just think of the craziest things that could come off of that. And then like, that's what it's about.
All right. Well, look, you've been generous with your time. It's been, I was wrong. I didn't think you were going to thrive like this in Detroit. I've been super, super impressed. Every game I watch or look at the box, I'm like, you did it again, 20 more, 25 more efficient shooting. So I congratulate you. Congratulations on the deal, and keep it up, my friend. It's been great to see.
Thank you. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.